conversate cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Bobby Wright by Cole River Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cole.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Here we are, in a sense, mercifully at week's end. Everything sort of went nastily sideways Wednesday evening. Thank you for all the kind words about last night's program. It is much appreciated. We'll probably be about it. This is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, our weekly program in which we fire up the Extraordinary Cat Group, as well as the Stress Line, 304-663-466, and try to make sense of the week. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn, says Jeremy. Much appreciated. Folks wandering into the chat room, you can too if you are so inclined. Just head on over to headonradionetwork.com, fix out a screen name and a password. You'll be involved in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the real-time conversation that takes place during the program. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening to longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, the chat group Sparky. I've been informed that, in fact, someone who had never even heard the program before heard last night's program and tweeted out the podcast 100 because of what she thought of, well, the quality of the discussion. That is humbling indeed, and thank you. Thank you very kindly for so doing. So, here in about an hour, we're at the roundtable, and we'll get Friday on the Front Porch going. Unfortunately, we will probably spend the next 57 minutes or so engaged in an examination of, my God, One of these massacres brings out, it's like the platonic ideal of stupid in the right wing. All the excuses, all the apologists go running for the scene of the crime with their various and sundry explanations for why this has to do, of course, with guns. Added into the mix this time through is the fact that apparently we have to relitigate the Civil War, because that nasty, poisonous mushroom is popping up all over after what was apparently a spring rain of blood. Well, y'all know the Civil War wasn't about slavery, don't you? It wasn't about slavery till that Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. No, they do that. They do that. By the way, a little technical note, Sparky just asked in the chat room, anybody having buffering issues? Everybody's having buffering issues because I'm having buffering issues here. I've already sent a note to Ben Birch to check to please check the stream server because my internet speeds here are what they ordinarily and normally are. There's nothing sucking up bandwidth, and I think we're probably having server issues again. Might be time for an update or a reboot or something. Who knows? So I will ask you to kindly please bear with us. Gentle reminder, because I forgot to do this yesterday evening, and thus we have gotten ourselves in a hell of a hole. This is a listener-supported radio ads here. Gold now, or for Bose Wave radios that you listen to, having just taken your herbal hair growth remedy pill as you laid a foam and which rests a bowling ball that was only recently dropped there by the Oric vacuum cleaner that picked it up only moments before. No, the only thing that has kept this radio network going for the last kind of termination on the air. And, yes, we have gotten ourselves into a nasty bit of a hole. We have about $560 to raise in order to finish the week okay and pay off bills that are, well, rather. And I am happy to announce, courtesy of Sparky, the return of what appears to be the pull the pin challenge, you know, putting out the fire, not pulling the pin on the grenade, pulling the pin on the fire extinguisher and putting out the financial fire. If some combination of people will chip in $100, it will be matched by Sparky, and thereby turn your 5 into 10, your 10 into 20, your 20 to 40, your 40 to 50, 40 to 80, up to fun, and another 50 will turn into 100. So there's $100 waiting on the table for anybody who wants to kick in to help, and that will go a long way toward the $560 we need to raise in one evening, and that's really a hurdle, quite frankly, but I hope we can. In advance. Now, like I said, and we got some other stuff too, and hopefully we will be able to talk about those things as well. Because, I mean, there's more. There is more than just this single horror taking place. Ah, and thank you to Carol in Australia. She just knocked off. I get that. We all do. That leaves $50 to go on the challenge, and hopefully we can take care of that right quick. No, there are more. There's more than just the single horror that has defined this couple of days. I really do wish we could find people encyclical, because that remains the most important statement to come out of the Roman Catholic Church in more than a generation. Probably need to start with South Carolina. And a rather extraordinary moment in time, as the unscathed, unharmed, nobody even punched him in the mouth, arraigned today. He has waived extradition, and at the arraignment, pursuant to South Carolina, a family member of the slain victims of Dylan Storm Roof's attempt to get a second civil war going, well, they were there in the bond hearing. Now, before we stand, he was not admitted to bond. It was not legal for him to be admitted to bond on 9 counts of murder. There was a firearms charge, however, and the magistrate or low-level court arraigning kind of judicial authority had to admit him to bond. So you get this very surreal video image of Dylan Storm Roof. His eyes video monitor, because he was not in the same courtroom room with the victims. Standing behind him, two paramilitary-looking police types with bulletproof vests and the whole kit, like they're getting ready to cross the no man's land. It's an empty, just a little square room with what appear to be acoustic panels, and him look not a scratch on him. And the victims of his bloodthirsty a second American Civil War speaking to him. Then is one of the victims' family members.
Your name, ma'am?
Felicia Sanders.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders, for being here.
We welcome you Wednesday night in our Bible study. you have killed some of the most beautifulest people that I know. Everybody hurts. And I never see him. Tawanza Sanders is my son, but Tawanza was my hero. Tawanza was my hero. But as we say in Bible study, we enjoyed you, but may God have mercy on you.
Thank you, ma'am. Representative of Daniel Simmons. Your name, ma'am?
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Simmons, for being here. Your statement, please.
Although my grandfather and the other victims died at the hands of Israel, everyone's plea for your soul is proof that they lived in love and their legacies will live in love. So hate won't win. And I just want to thank the courts for making sure that hate doesn't win.
Cynthia Hurd, a representative of the family of Cynthia Hurd. Thank you very much, and thank you for being here today, sir. The Reverend DePayne Middleton Doctor. Your name, please, ma'am?
DePayne Middleton Brown.
Thank you for being here.
DePayne Doctor was my sister. And I too thank you on the behalf of my family for not allowing hate to win. For me, I'm a work in progress, and I acknowledge that I am very angry. But one thing DePayne has always joined in our family with is that she taught me that we are the family that love built. We have no room for hate, so we have to forgive. I pray God on your soul, and I also thank God that I won't be around when your judgment day comes with him. May God bless you.
Thank you, ma'am. Representative of the Reverend and Senator Clemente Pinckney. Is there a representative of the Pinckney family here today? Thank you. Mr. Pennington, is there anything else you wish to tell the court?
Not at this time, Your Honor.
Ms. Wilson, is there anything that you wish to tell the court?
No, sir, Your Honor. I just wanted to make it clear for those who aren't familiar, again, with that process, that you don't have authority to set bond on the murder charges, so that's why you aren't addressing those. We do have the bond for the one firearms charge. So regardless of what bond you set, the defendant will remain in custody.
Yes, ma'am. On the 9 counts of murder, I do not have the authority to set bond on these charges. On the count, 1 count of possession of a weapon during the commission of the crime, a violent crime, I'm setting your bond, young man, at $1 million. Is there anything else to come before this court today in regards to this case? Hearing none, we stand concluded in this hearing. Thank you.
I don't know about y'all, but it was gut-wrenching to hear those voices. And I will say, with no vitriol, that this is a moment that I am ever so glad not to be a Christian. Because I would not have it in me, in any stretch of the imagination, to extend forgiveness to that little monster. That little neo-Nazi, that little proto-Klansman, that little murderer. And I admire the restraint displayed by the still shocked, still grieving victims of his hatred, his racism. I have more admiration for that than I can express. And it is neither here nor there whether you or I manifest any forgiveness. We are not the ones who have to do it. The governor of South Carolina, Nimrata Haley, continues to find every bucket in the yard she can step in. You know, it was immediately in the aftermath of this massacre that Nimrata Haley told the world that there was really no sense in attempting to understand why Dylan Stormroof did what he did. She said, we'll never understand it. Well, you know, seeing as how the young man was taken without a scratch on him and wasn't tasered or pepper sprayed or chokeholded or accused of strong arm robbery and gunned down in the street, maybe we will understand. Maybe we can try. I would like for the young man to have all the opportunity in the world that he wants to explain exactly what his motives were. Although I strongly suspect that when we get right down to it, if there is in fact even a trial, I can't imagine his lawyer suggesting that it would be a good idea to put him on the stand in his own defense. That just seems unlikely. So unless at some point in time there's a penalty phase or some situation under which he would be afforded the opportunity to speak to the court, or unless someone does what Gore Vidal did with Timothy McVeigh and goes in and documents his story for him, we might be waiting a long time before we find out exactly everything that moved him to that brutal, homicidal, racist rage-filled moment Wednesday night. And one suspects that South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley doesn't much care, because like I said, she keeps looking for buckets to step in. Because no sooner had I arisen this morning then I found another story from the New York Times in which, lo and behold, there was South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley again making another incredibly, almost incomprehensibly stupid statement. In this particular instance, a tormenting of the language, the English language, that was so twisted as to really, really seem quite Freudian, if you will. Nimrata Haley didn't have any problem calling for the death penalty. They like them some death penalty down there in South Carolina. But it's what she said in the course of that that sort of took my breath away. And one of the things that's interesting is that I saw the quote originally in the New York Times story, and I posted it to my Facebook page. And yet, between this morning and now, it has been updated, and the particularly bizarre statement of Governor Nimrata Haley seems to have fallen down the memory hole. What the story now says is a growing number of officials, including Governor Nikki R. Haley, and whose name isn't really Nikki, and Senator, any more than Bobby Jindal's name is Bobby, and Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, but see, if you're Bobby Jindal or Nikki Haley, you can't run under your real name of Nimrata in South Carolina or Piyush in Louisiana and expect anybody in your chosen political party to ever vote for you. Just reminds them how brown you are, you know? A growing number of officials, including Governor Nikki R. Haley and Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, under the fainting couch in South Carolina, called the mass killing a hate crime, with the governor and others calling for the death penalty. It remained to be seen whether state or federal prosecutors would pursue hate crime charges. "It's certainly a hate crime," Mr. Graham told WCBD, the local NBC television station, Friday. "These people would not be dead today if they weren't black." And Nimrata Haley said on the NBC Today show today, "This is an absolute hate crime. We absolutely will want him to have the death penalty. This is the worst hate that I've seen and that the country has seen in a long time." Well, that's nice and vanilla. But gone was the tormented statement that she made that probably displayed her real inner being's thoughts on the topic. Because in describing the massacre at the Emmanuel AME Church, Nimrata Haley said that the nine there, and this matter, this leapt off the page at me because I am a long-time reader of words. I'm a long-time knower of words and an understander of words in what, whenever they're caught saying something hateful, the Republicans complain of being out of context. So this is in context. I'm a real context guru. Oh, and by the way, one of the things that Nimrata Haley didn't get around to mentioning on the Today Show is that South Carolina Stan is one of only five states in the union that does not have hate crime legislation. So the only way this is going to be prosecuted as a hate crime is if Loretta Lynch decides that it's worth the time of the Civil Rights Division of the United States Department of Justice to pursue them. and sends the appropriate message downstream to the U.S. Attorney for South Carolina stand. Because, do you wonder why? Do you remember when hate crime legislation was first considered? Do you remember how the right wing responded?
I believe that hate crime legislation is a dangerous step down a constitutional slippery slope because it means that we're going to be punishing people for how they're thinking. It's not so much hate crimes as it is thought crimes.
Yeah. Well, in 45 of the 50 states, that line of twisted thinking did not prevail, but twisted thinking is as much an export of South Carolina as shrimp and grits and peaches and treason. And so there are no hate crimes legislation. There's no hate crimes legislation. You'll just be charged with murder. And therefore, the sons of the old Confederacy gathered together under that filthy rag of hate in Columbia can say, it was not a hate crime, it was a murder. But anyway, what Nimrata Haley said. She said, although the New York Times has conveniently disappeared it, unless you can find it somewhere. I had it this morning. I have it still. I preserved it via a quote on Twitter and on my Facebook page. South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley said that, and this is the quote, 9 people were innocently killed, unquote. 9 people were innocently killed. Now, I know from long practice and having received emails from lots and lots and lots of members of the Horn Family Commune congregation that we have lots of practitioners of the art of word knowing. And lots of them are at this very moment going, what? She said, what? Yes. The governor of South Carolina said that the people slain in the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston were innocently killed. Innocently, you see, is an adverb. Adverbs do for verbs what adjectives do for nouns. They are descriptors. Black dog. Black modifies dog to indicate what color the dog was. He ran quickly. It might be superfluous, but quickly modifies how he ran. He ran quickly from the black dog. See? In other words, in the quote from South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley, she said that the 9 people whose lives were taken on Wednesday night at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston had their lives taken innocently. Because innocently modifies killed. She did not say 9 innocent people were killed. Innocent would then modify people. But to the extent that innocently modifies the word killed, she is referring to, come on, everybody, Dylan Storm Roof. Dr. Freud got up under her slip, or the goddess of irony just, you know, kind of right on the ear, and suddenly a little bit of South Carolina truth came boiling out. Because in the world of Nimrata Haley, Republican, who was never, ever, 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 ever going to get a vote from anybody who attended Emmanuel AME Church, Nimrata Haley, via temporary possession, I suppose, by the Goddess of Irony, declared Dylan Stormroof to have killed his victims innocently. 9 people were innocently killed. See, I remember all the way back to the great cleanest hunt of the 1990s when the Republicans were all over the radio and the television and the shiny new Fox News hollering, "My friends, words mean things." Well, yes, GOP, they do. And one of your little stars who probably harbors vice presidential ambitions declared that the person who committed 9 cold-blooded murders in Charleston, South Carolina on Wednesday night did so innocently. I don't know about you, but it gave me chills when I read it, and it gives me chills now to be talking about it. Minutes before the hour, a note coming in from Steve from Vermont. Steve begins with a quote from Chris Hedges. "Violence is a disease that corrupts all who use it, regardless of the cause." Steve says, "Sometimes we think we've got it pretty good in Vermont, but we're still part of it. My late brother-in-law was a brutal right-wing fanatic and raised his son to be the same way." Sorry. Family time. Back to what Steve wrote. "My late brother-in-law was a brutal right-wing fanatic and raised his son to be the same way. He used to refer to his wife, my sister, as a heifer, a cow, and at times she talked back, but over time her will was crushed. And part of the sadness around this is over time she became a colder, less sensitive person, more like him. But she was still my sister, and at family gatherings, I generally held back, not wanting to cause any unpleasantness." He wore an NRA shirt proudly. Life is complicated. He could tell a good story. "When an older son died tragically from natural causes, and he was a sweet person with a gentle disposition, it was devastating for everyone, but I will never forget a conversation I had with my brother-in-law soon after in which he said, 'I can't kill anything anymore.' By anything, he meant animals, from squirrels to coyotes to deer, and yet his fantasies were more expansive when he shared them, which he shared with me from time to time, and the list included liberals, Jews, and niggers. By the way, he was well aware I was a liberal. Death, grief can open us up and leave us exposed and take form in unexpected ways. He died soon after. His other son channels his father's racist gun cult traits and acts out by exclaiming at dinner one day, 'I like to kill things.' He looks like him, acts like him, and generally behaves as if no one else exists in the world. Yet there is blood, and I worry for his sanity and safety." That's where we're at these days. Can we be little Gandhis, Steve asks, and change the worlds where we actually interact and inhabit? Steve closes saying, "Your show is great. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Steve. Thank you kindly. And Agnes says, "That was beautiful." It's all around us. They walk among us. With regard to the arraignment of Dylan Stormroof, our buddy Steve in New York says, there is more grace, love, and true Christianness in the little finger of any of those people who spoke than in the entire Christian membership of the Confederacy. And I tend to hold that true. I hope the buffering has settled down a little bit. I had a note from Sylvia. Not only buffering, but a periodically skipping of the dialogue like something got left out. I am proud to announce that Sparky's Challenge, thanks to Jack and thanks to Sylvia, has in fact been met. It was very, very helpful, and we do appreciate it. And thank you also to Harold. Harold has been a tremendous help this evening. And with that, we are almost done with fundraising for this evening and filling up the backlog that we had found ourselves in. Thank you. Thank you, Harold. Thank you very kindly. And thank you, Sylvia, and thank you, Jack. Like I said, this has, and these things always do, afford an opportunity for America's gun culture, America's gun cult, America's blood cult, America's cult of death and destruction, to show us all just exactly how sick they truly are. Enter, stage right, Charles Chaz Cotton. Charles Chaz Cotton is a national board member of the National Republican Rifle Association. Oh, by the way, Jeremy, also in Vermont, said, I can't agree more with Steve. I know far, far too many Vermonters who are all too gunned up, ready to kill anything that moves on their properties, including humans. We have no need of permits to conceal a firearm here, so you never know when, where, and how close you may be to an ammosexual. It makes me sick. In, you know, arguably liberal Vermont. But again, they walk among us. You don't ever know when you're walking next to the when you're walking along beside the next Dylan Stormroof. You can't know because they don't want you to know. They like having the drop on you because, see, that's part of the whole deal, is that. Well, let's go back to NRA board member Charles Chaz Cotton, who decided to go sharing his expert opinion at the Texas Concealed Handgun License Forum. If you go there, don't, if you want to keep dinner down, you'll find that they call themselves the focal point for Texas firearms information and discussion. Charles Chaz Cotton is a moderator there. Remember, Clemente Pinckney was a member of the South Carolina State Senate. And Charles Chaz Cotton, board member for years, and slated to remain a board member until 2017 of the National Bloodthirsty Rifle Association. Well, he declared on this forum, speaking of Clemente Pinckney, and never having been taught by Mama or apparently anyone else not to speak ill of the dead, he voted against concealed carry. Eight of his church members who might be alive if he had expressly allowed members to carry handguns in church or did. Innocent people died because of his position on a political issue. And because there's none of that celestial justice, it doesn't really exist, the earth did not immediately open up and swallow this evil prick whole the instant that he finished typing it. He's still out there walking the streets, probably armed to the teeth. But of course, and I suppose we don't need to, but we will, analyze the degree to which what Charles Chaz Cotton said makes not a damn lick of sense. When the shooter has the drop on you, you're done. Unless the shooter happens to be as awful a shot as your average Imperial Stormtrooper in the Star Wars movie, and at point blank, that's not likely. Can you imagine nine people in a house of worship? And, you know, just because I'm not a Christian doesn't mean that I don't understand the philosophy and the iconography. Can you imagine nine people in a house dedicated to their murdered God carrying instruments of murder into it? One. Can you then imagine a 74-year-old woman fumbling through her purse trying to find behind the package of tissues, under the lipstick, past the little pocket Bible that she carries, trying to find the little 22 caliber handgun that hubby gave her for just such moments as this? Or perhaps delving into her gun holster bra and hopefully managing not to kill herself before the killer killed her. Remember, the last person we heard about using the gun bra was the Republican politician in Michigan who shot herself right through the heart. Or maybe fumbling through her concealed carry purse and shooting the person next to her, much as the Freedom Protector did up in Idaho, whose little 2-year-old reached into her concealed carry purse and blew Mommy away. So, Charles Chaz Cotton, National Board of Directors member of the National Republican Rifle Association, is simply little more than a disgusting animal. Because I can't say that he's human, because no human being would say what he said. He blamed a dead man for getting murdered. How do you say something like that and still hold yourself to have even the thinnest shred of humanity? Because I can't fathom it. But they are all over the place. It has become something on the order of almost a parlor game for members of the for-profit media to stick a microphone in the face of a Republican presidential contender and say, was what happened in Charleston a hate crime? Was it racism? And I guess you kind of have to do it, because when you're dealing with Republicans, you don't know what kind of answer you're going to get. Normal people understand that, yes, it was racism, yes, it was a hate crime. People who bothered to inform themselves about the fact that Dylan Stormroof said, I have to do this, you're raping our women, and you're taking over our country, you have to go, and then proceeded to slaughter 9 innocent people. You'll notice I didn't say that 9 innocent people, or 9 people were innocently slaughtered. See how easy it is? The only way you come up with something like innocently slaughtered is if there's some conflict in your head by which you're worried about offending your gunned-up, hyper-violent, not-real-sharp, Atne ute, itbre, if you one what I in may, Republican base. But anybody with a half a brain understands that this young man meant what he said. But damned if it seems like the entire Republican Party and a whole bunch of the South generally aren't doing, they're desperate. They're flounging around. They're flailing. They're grasping at anything that looks like a lifeline in a sea of recognition of just how vile they are, to find a way to make it not what it so obviously is. Was. And so it is, so it was, and I wonder about all of these professional campaign professional advisors. I wonder why it is that they don't have, again with the Atne Ute Itbre, if you one what I in me, I only do it that way because I know Republicans are baffled by that. You wonder about these hype who say, oh, sure, you want to go on Newsmax TV and talk to Steve Malzberg, Governor Perry? Well, I don't see a problem with that. And that's exactly what happened. Steve Malzberg invited presidential candidate Rick Perry, with his smart glasses on, to come and talk to him on the internet TV box. Get the hockey puck. You're gonna want it. Now, naturally, since this is right-wing TV, we have to begin with a clip from that one in our White House. And if you troll the sewers and swamps of Facebook, you will find that one in our White House, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper. Well, he's the cause of all of this. More on that in a minute.
Communities like this have had to endure tragedies like this too many times. We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun.
All right. Exploitation of a tragedy?
Well, that's always the knee-jerk reaction, is that if we can just take the guns out of the hands of everyone in this country, these types of things won't happen again.
Well, Rick, you dumbass. The question does obtain, if he'd had to use a ball bat, could he have killed 9 people? If he'd had to use a knife, or maybe an assegai, Could he have killed nine people? If he had had to use a claymore, a big sword, could he have killed nine people? Now, he certainly could have killed nine people had he used, say, a pipe bomb, an improvised explosive device, as we like to call it, in the aftermath of our horrible, horrible, horrible mistake in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, a pipe bomb, like young Mr. Boulware wanted to use in Dallas last week. But generally speaking, there aren't that many mass killings that involve people with foils or rapiers sword slashing their way through a congregation at an African Methodist Episcopal church. Or anywhere else for that matter. So, as we can tell, Rick Perry makes sure that America understands that the smart glasses aren't working, and he's still a dumbass right out of the gate. But he ain't done.
As long as evil and cowardice is alive in the world, and I suggest it has been and it will be, there will be people who have, for whatever reason, again, we don't know, as the president said, we don't have all the facts, and I'm not ready to point to any particular policy, but I know that we need to be working to bring people together in this country.
Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya. Bang! Second verse, same as the first. Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya. Boom! Third verse. Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya. Rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat. Kumbaya. Man, that's some presidential leadership, ain't it? You know it. But he's not done. And you're not safe away from the hockey puck.
It's one of the reasons that we work so hard in the state of Texas to create an environment where you could get an education.
And a gun!
Texas now has the second highest overall high school graduation rate in America. If you're African American in America and you live in Texas, you live in the state that has the number one high school graduation.
Which is so very, very important.
It is so important to this.
It gives hope and it gives you a chance.
And that means they can graduate high school and then they can be murdered sitting in a church. That's great, Rick. Wow, you're so presidential.
That's where I would like to see the next president of the United States really focused on, bringing this country together. Allowing those states to come up with programs to improve education opportunities.
As you did, but I do want to ask, did he go too quickly to the microphone and blame guns? And is this just an attempt to exploit a situation?
Well, that's the thing. If you weren't listening, Steve Maltzberg, he already told you. If the young man had just gone to school in Texas, well, he might not have done this. He might not have failed ninth grade twice, and he might not have ever gone to that Klan rally or Aryan Nations meeting or White Nationalist Society gathering where he bought those apartheid era Rhodesia and South Africa flag patches. See, he would have gone to school in Texas and he would have had a gun and freedom, and maybe he could have grown up and graduated high school and gotten a job with the McKinney, Texas Police Department and found a much more helpful and creative way to a better outlet for his racism whereby he could crack the skull of maybe a 14-year-old little black girl.
This is the MO of this administration.
Oh, by the way, he wants a president who will bring the nation together. That is predicated, of course. There's a condition precedent there. That we are a divided nation, and that the current president is the one who did the dividing. See, there wasn't a racist in America until January the 20th, 2009. And then, bang, just like that, they started cropping up because that one in our White House, that Kenyan Muslim usurper was out there making racists of all the white people.
Time there is an accident like this.
Oh, what? Let's get him in context.
Microphone and blame guns, and is this just an attempt to exploit a situation, in
well,
your view?
This is the MO of this administration. Anytime there is an accident like this, the president's clear. He doesn't like for Americans to have guns.
Right.
And
you got that right. You heard it. Former Texas Governor Rick Perry, even with his smart glasses on, cannot tell the difference between an act of cold-blooded murder and an accident. For instance, up in New York City, we talked about this Wednesday evening. Before I closed the show and found out that we'd had another blood, had the spigots opened on another bloodbath in South Carolina, we talked about the potential bloodbath that was narrowly averted in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria when a drunk guy at a wedding felt like he just wasn't safe unless he had his penis extender, pistol, in his pocket. And that somehow or another, the gun miraculously fired. Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance Jr. has decided to defer charges. But the gun miraculously fired, tore a hole in Vladimir Gotlobovsky's pants, and that was his good going to the wedding pants too, by God, and hit the floor, and pieces of floor kind of shattered and exploded all over the place. The bullet grazed one woman's head, and two members of the hotel staff were hit by shrapnel. Yeah, that's an accident. It's a really stupid accident, but it remains an accident just the same. And Rick Perry cannot tell the difference between, say, that or the woman at Starbucks in Florida who accidentally drops her purse and her freedom protector accidentally goes off and shoots her buddy. Accident. Accidents will happen. Can't tell the difference between that and a young man who says, I've got to do this. You're raping our women and you're taking over our country. You have to go. And deliberately slaughters 9 members of the human race gathered together in their house of worship. That's an accident. Rick Perry just said, when an accident like this happens, oh, and by the way, while we're at it, that line, you're raping our women, we talked a little bit about that last night, about whether or not a news search of the Lexington, South Carolina, or perhaps the general South Carolina area, would disclose that there had been a string of white woman rapes by black perpetrators. And the odds being that there weren't. Well, see, that whole you're raping our white women business that's old South dog whistle language. That's the language the Knight Riders would use. That's the rationale that they used in Mississippi when they kidnapped 15-year-old Emmett Till beat him beyond recognition as a human being, lynched him, wrapped him with chains from a cotton gin fan, and threw him into the Pearl River. Because he was said to have given a look to a white woman. Accident. Yeah, hear it again. Why not? Oh, and by the way, when he says that's the MO of this administration, MOS, of course, is an abbreviation for the Latin phrase modus operandi. Hint. Because the goddess of irony watches these fools' language. Modus operandi is a phrase that comes directly from the Old English common criminal law. Means of operating. It means motive. And it applies expressly to criminal conduct. So, in addition to everything else he implied about the sitting president of the United States, Rick Perry and his smart glasses also asserted that the president of the United States is a criminal. Just so we're all clear. Maybe we should change the name of this program to The Art of Knowing Words. I don't know. But hear the subject clip again.
Quite a situation in your view. This is the MO of this administration. Anytime there is an accident like this, the president's clear. He doesn't like for Americans to have guns.
Right.
And so he uses every opportunity, this being another one, to basically go parrot that message.
Is a debate going on today?
Parrot? Parrot that message? Parrot. You know, because the president of the United States is not a real human being, and he's not capable of forming his own thoughts. He can only repeat other thoughts that have been, other words that have been repeated at him. He can only parrot things. I'd say we're about 15 nanoseconds from Rick Perry calling him boy, aren't you? Wouldn't you say that? Yeah. It's kind of cute, though, after he calls it an accident. There is a little gap there where he goes, oh, shit. His inner monologue.
Especially, should this be called an act of terror as opposed to a, whatever they're calling it, a crime?
Check the duct tape, okay, around the hockey puck. Just check it, because you don't want to scare the neighbors.
A murder, a terror. Well, what's the line there in your view?
I don't know, but the...
Well, he doesn't know. He doesn't know if this is an act of terror. A 21-year-old man, armed with a pistol and a lot of ammunition, he reloaded 5 times, walks into a church, declares, I have to do this, after, by the way, sitting with the congregation in Bible study for a while, declares, I have to do this. You're raping our women and you're taking over our country. Important words, those two uses of our. You've got to go. He had previously said he wanted to start a second civil war. He wanted to start a race war. But Jimmy Dick Perry doesn't know if it's an act of terror. Terrorism is generally understood to be acts of violence used to advance a political agenda or to cause political change by a government. I think wanting to start a second civil war falls generally under that rubric, do you not? He doesn't know.
Going on today, especially, is this, should this be called an act of terror as opposed to a, whatever they're calling it, you know, crime or murder or terror?
Well,
what's the line there in your view?
I don't know. But the, I think the facts, once we get them, there were more people than that killed in Paris. This was...
What? I kind of took a two count there so that I didn't just start speaking in tongues. Well, there were more people killed in Paris. Is this math class? Rick Perry, did you just say if he had only killed more Negroes, you'd be a little more certain whether it was terrorism? Or are you saying, had the nine people who were killed been killed by Muslims, you'd be much more certain? Oh, by the way, back to the Our Women business. Irish Dave pointing out, Our Women, so it's a property crime? Yeah. I noticed that earlier, and I don't know how I managed not to mention it, but yeah. Our Women. Just, how many women, did Dylan Stormroof and apparently one other person at least, because it's not you're raping my women, it's you're raping our women, so that means there needs to be Dylan Stormroof and one other person whose women that they own are being raped. Oh, but it's also our country, so he... Oh, he's... I see. Okay. He was speaking ex cathedra generally for white people. I guess I just missed the postcard from him saying, you know, dear Bob, do you mind if I go into a church and commit a massacre and offer to speak in your name as a white guy? Oh, by the way, something that also seems to be slipping past people's note, and I don't think it would be so easily... blown past had he been white, but Clemente Pinckney was a real live, honest, serving, sitting, duly sworn member of the Senate of the state of South Carolina. Now, granted, he was a Democrat, and well, they don't pay much attention to Democrats in the legislature of South Carolina, but he was still an actual member of the South Carolina state government. And yet the word assassination, I mean, we've talked about murder, we've talked about was it a hate crime, we've talked about it was it terrorism. Where's the query about was it an assassination? Because see, I'm thinking, not that I want anybody to do this, because I don't, because I find all of this repulsive. But I'm thinking that had Dylan Stormroof walked up to Nimrata Haley and said, you're taking over our country, you have to go, and shot her, no one would have a problem understanding that that was, in fact, an assassination. So was this. Not that Rick Perry thinks about it, because, you know, Rick Perry's got white skin, so none of these white terrorists are going to want to blow him away. But it was an assassination. And that isn't even a blip on the damned radar. Do continue, Jimmy Dick.
This was a crime of hate. We know that.
See, that's an easy dodge. The one thing that all these Republicans can say, especially these presidential contenders can say, is it was a crime of hate. Well, what kind of hate? Hate of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Mark my words, one of them will accuse Dylan Stormroof of being an atheist any day now, if they haven't already. Up in Canada, Ron pointing out, one could speculate that the right-wing media reaction would have been quite different if a black man had invaded a white Southern Baptist church and wiped out 9 God-fearing Christians, let alone if a white man had invaded a white Southern Baptist church and wiped out 9 God-fearing white Christians, one of whom happened to be a member of state government. The fires in the given black section of town would probably still be burning, even as we spoke. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. Rosewood, Florida? Look it up. Or then there's the... And it's still a tourist attraction, no kidding. There's still the courthouse in Pickens County, Alabama, a little town called Carrollton. Sleepy southern town. Courthouse sits in the middle of the town with the businesses arranged in a square around it. And during the Civil War, which of course was not about slavery, the Union Army burned the Pickens County Courthouse to the ground. Because that was a really neat way of making sure the planter class would have the devil's own time proving ownership of their property. But they rebuilt the courthouse as a fine brick structure. And came a day when a lynch mob had gathered unto itself a black man whom they were determined to kill. And in order to prevent the lynch mob from having its way until the black man could be given a nice fair trial and then hanged, he was secreted away in the attic of the courthouse. This is the legend. As he peered down at the angry lynch mob comprised of the good God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing white folks below, the legend says a thunderstorm blew up. And as he pressed his face against the glass, that lightning struck and forever fried his image into the glass. It is known in Alabama ghost story lore as the face in the courthouse window, with the story being that they've tried scrubbing and replacing the pane of glass, blah, 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 and the face always comes back. It is, of course, a cartoon caricature face. You can find it if you look it up online. And he was, of course, killed, which meant that the lynch mob could go happily home. Yeah. The only truth out of this is that a black man was killed for charges that may very well have been trumped up. I think maybe there was a second courthouse along there, and he was alleged to have burnt it, and then they rebuilt it again. You know, that one burned down, fell over, sank into the swamp, but the third one stayed up. Right. Yeah, or maybe he was, or maybe he busted up a shift robe for Miss Mayeller. Hard to tell. But see, that's the kind of thing that would happen had the roles been reversed here. And there's one more thing worthy of examination. Dylan Stormroof is said to have reloaded 5 times. Now, when the Adkisson killer stormed into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation in the Knoxville, Tennessee area a few years back, he squeezed off a couple of rounds and killed a couple of people, but unarmed people rushed him. Some died in the process. But they took him to the ground and restrained him until he could be taken away by law enforcement. And in the attempt to contemplate what went on, and none of us will ever know, save for those who were there, it must have been an entirely different scenario. What I've read says that even as he was killing, they were begging him not to. And that he continued to reload. This proud son of the Confederacy. This guardian of Southern heritage and Southern pride, whose heart had no doubt swelled from time to time as he gazed upon that filthy rag of treason that flies in Columbia, South Carolina. The youngest person killed was, what, 28? The eldest was 74? And they never had a chance. Apparently, they could not get at him to stop him. One wonders how many of those rounds on those reloads were fired into dead bodies. Just to make sure. But in the amoral, ethics-free universe of Rick Perry, that, even as he reloaded 5 times, that was an accident.
And also, I think there's a real issue to be talked about. It seems to me, again, without having all the details mm-hmm. about this one, that these individuals have been medicated. And there may be...
Yeah, played that card too. The medication card. Now, you notice how earlier he said all the facts aren't in, so we don't know. Well, one of the facts we really, really, really don't know, except for the fact that Alex Jones has been prattling on about it, is whether he was medicated or not. That is a real not known, a real known unknown. Rick Perry doesn't know if he really said, "You're raping our women and you're taking over our country, you have to go." Rick Perry doesn't know if he said that. But he's confident enough to say he was medicated.
And also, I think there's a real issue to be talked about. It seems to me, again, without having all the details mm-hmm. about this one.
You know, that's and by the way, without having all the details about this one, that's the same sort of prefatory statement as, I'm not a scientist, but, as in, I'm not a scientist, but climate change isn't real. We don't have all the details, but I'm going to guess he was Medicaid.
And also, I think there's a real issue to be talked about. It seems to me, again, without having all the details mm-hmm. about this one, that these individuals have been medicated. And there may be a real issue in this country from the standpoint of these drugs and how they're used. I know for a fact, being a substantial supporter of our military and our veterans.
Oh, I thought he was going to say, I know from the fact of having been an addict myself. You do remember the presidential debate from 2012, the one pageant there where he was practically chewing the air gum. And he couldn't count to three anymore. Yeah.
That the Veterans Administration, for instance, is handing out these yes. opioids in massive
yes.
amounts.
Yes.
And then people question, well, why can't these young individuals get work? Or why is the suicide rate so high? So, I mean, there are a lot of issues here underlying this that I think we as a country need to have a conversation about rather than just the knee-jerk reaction
right.
of saying, you know, if we can just take all the guns away.
And oddly enough, no one said if we can just take all the guns away. Rick Perry is having a conversation with some thing inside what passes for his, you know, those thin gray settlings between his ears that slosh around on around his big old lizard brain and pass for, you know, higher functioning intellect. And the VA's just out there. Oh, what? You're in here to have your toenails trimmed because of your diabetes? Here, have a handful of hydrocodone. Then you won't remember the Department of Education either. Jesus. And by no stretch of the imagination is that all there is, but I have filibustered way into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable's time. Marty with a couple of notes. One, I wonder if Clint Eastwood will make a movie about it. And then Marty says, update from Crooks and Liars, quote, after being ripped on social media for this stupid comment, Perry said, oops. Golly Moses. Thank you very kindly, Wesley, for jumping into the fundraising this evening. It is much appreciated. We came into the evening with a tall order, and with a lot of help, we have we've gotten most of it done. So thank you all very, very kindly. So let's take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We will also, the other line, the stress line, 304-663-4676, is also open. And if you can't or don't know how to use Skype, mostly it's if you can't use Skype, because there's not a lot of don't know how to Skype. But if you are technologically limited from using Skype, then you're welcome to use the stress line for participation in Friday on the Front Porch. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's where we'll never get you. It's
Accidents will happen. Friday on the front porch, we are exactly halfway through the program for the evening. And let's run over and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky, good evening.
Hey, I'm running around at the moment.
okay, well, you know, do it and feel good.
Judy just got back from shopping.
Oh, okay.
I'll be right there.
All right. So we will check in with other members. Good evening, Rick.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Well, you know, not crazy about the, well,
no, I know.
Downright
horrible news.
Depressed by the subject matter.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's so much the subject matter itself. You know, if this happened, and how do I say this without sounding like a monster? See, I worry about sounding like a monster. If you're a Republican, you don't have to. But I don't want to sound like a monster in saying this. If this was the first time something like this had happened in 100 years, we would be shocked, we would be sickened, and we would be a country that was apparently capable of trying to find a way for it not to happen again for another 100. But I think what makes me sickest out of all of this is the sense with which I am suffused. To wit, that, okay, that's what happened this week. Something else will happen next week. And if it's not in South Carolina, maybe it'll be Alabama. If it's not Alabama, maybe it'll be Tennessee. Or, hell, maybe it'll be California.
Well, it's sort of like Groundhog Day every day, except with mass shootings instead of, you know, weather reporting, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately, you know? And is there any end to it? And I think what's so troubling about this incident is, I guess, the way that the media is failing to report it. I mean, it clearly was a hate crime, based on what he said before he started shooting.
Well, why did the New York Times disappear Nimrata Haley's quote about them being innocently killed?
That makes no sense. Yeah, exactly. Innocently killed. Okay, well.
Because there wasn't a correction at the bottom of the story saying, we previously reported that Governor Haley had said the victims were innocently killed. She didn't really say that. We regret the error. No, they just in a new version of the story, they just disappeared it. Why? Because it wasn't good for somebody who has vice presidential ambitions?
I suppose so. Maybe they got a call from her campaign or her chief of staff saying, look, you know, you got to change the governor's quote here in the story. I don't like it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't put it past that kind of thing happening in the mainstream media or so-called mainstream media, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We never know. Well, let's see here. Just curious. Nope. Okay. I was. By the way, after the questions about the Confederate flag last night,
yeah,
you know that they've got it set up in such a way legislatively that the governor herself cannot order the lowering of that flag. She can
really?
Order. She can order the lowering of the American flag. She can order the lowering of the state flag of South Carolina. She cannot unilaterally order the lowering of the Confederate battle flag, which indicates, of course, given its position, that the state of South Carolina is still at war with the United States, which Wednesday kind of proved.
That's because it's not flying over the Capitol.
No, but it's flying on the Capitol grounds. It's flying on state property. No, because
but it's a war memorial, and she doesn't have jurisdiction over it. By legislative rule.
Right. Well, but she had jurisdiction to lower the other two flags.
Correct, because she can do that.
Right. So they deliberately fixed it so that the governor could not unilaterally lower that treason banner.
Well, I think a good citizen should take it upon themselves to shimmy up the flagpole with about a half a gallon of gasoline and a lighter. And just light that sucker. That'll take care of it.
Wouldn't bother me in the least.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't. For some reason, I don't see that happening unless you get some, you know, radical progressive, if you want to call it that.
Well,
or an anarchist, maybe. Let's say an anarchist, not really a progressive.
And frankly, if I was, I can't even begin to say that. All I can do is surmise that the black community in South Carolina probably doesn't want to do that because they know that it would engender a lynch mob.
Right. Right, which is the same reason why they don't open carry, you know, AK-47s through the streets of Charleston, South Carolina, right?
Right.
That might play in Oakland, you know, but maybe not so well in Charleston, let's say. And even in Oakland, I mean, Governor Reagan proposed the law, and the Assembly and State Senate passed it very quickly to prevent open carry once the Black Panthers started taking advantage of that law.
Right.
You know, because the wrong people had guns, at least in in the opinion of the white power structure.
Well,
I want to give a quick shout-out, Bob.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think my friend Lori from Colorado is listening. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Yeah, her family, her daughter got married about a week and a half ago, and her mom was in town, so she missed out on the Friday on the front porch last Friday, but I think she's listening tonight. So anyway, she hasn't heard my voice before, but we've communicated via a crime blog for a long time and email and so forth, so there you go.
Well, it's always wonderful to know there's someone participating in any way, shape, form, or fashion in the conversation.
Yeah, she's a good, very good-hearted person. So, takes care of she's a foster mom.
Wow.
So, she's got a real soft spot in her heart for kids. So, it takes a special person to be able to do something like that. You know, I don't know that I'd have the patience, you know, but God bless her, you know.
Indeed.
Or God's bless her.
Right.
Well, let somebody else in here, Bob.
Okay. Well, I'll just work across the room as I see it here. Good evening, Carol in Australia.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm okay, but I won't ask you how you are because I know how you are.
It's an unanswerable question at this point, right?
It just keeps repeating too much. It's like a really bad record that nobody will take the damn needle off of.
But see, the thing is, down there where you are, Australia, I know, for instance, having been educated by our friend Robert down in New South Wales, the Port Arthur massacre occurred, and suddenly the people of Australia decided that that wasn't going to happen anymore, and they did something about it.
Boom, just like that.
I mean, it really was kind of boom just like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. But see, we don't have the NRA with its mitts into everything down here. The NRA is a major problem. It's a huge fascistic Nazi, really, organization that once you start reading more about psychopathy, you see all the telltale signs, and everything they say is, well, not everything, but most of what they say is the converse of the truth. And they fetishize a form of power that they think the little man should have that really is no power at all. It just makes them more vulnerable to also being shot. But they never talk about that part.
No, I don't know. Maybe these gun goobers were potty trained at gunpoint, or potty trained too early or too late, or somebody didn't love them right, or daddy slapped them around too much. I don't know.
Or they've been conditioned over a period of years with ADHD drugs and Prozac, and, you know, they throw these drugs which have profound effects on behavior at people with no real cause at all. They still don't know exactly how it affects people.
But, Carol, if we're going to call out Rick Perry for blaming a racist massacre on medication that he didn't even know people were taking, we can't very well use that argument ourselves, can we?
Well, I'm not using the argument. I'm just looking at the larger picture to see why this trend, why over the last 30 or 40 years it's gotten so much bigger and so many more people feel entitled to pop off, not with just their mouth but with a gun. And I do think it's encouraged by the psychotropic drugging of the entire country. It's not just psychotropic drugs that will screw your head up. It's all kinds of other drugs. It's not an excuse for anything. It's just part of the larger picture of psychopathic behaviors that, somebody says the other drug, religion, yeah, that's drummed in pretty heavily. You know, a lot of this crap goes back to the doctrine of discovery, which was what the Catholic Church promulgated to allow Columbus to go abroad and commit genocide,
right,
in order
the line of demarcation between the Portuguese and the Spanish, and right. But by the same token, even and I'm not just sitting here trying to be contrary. I'm trying to foster the discussion. If the other drug, religion, okay, but still, if we're going to cite that, then why weren't the members of the Emmanuel AME Church all sitting there packing heat? There's religion in this country, and there's religion. There is a segment of religion in this country that is extremely dangerous, that is well-armed, and that has apparently completely removed from their New Testaments, put up thy sword, those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. That ain't in their Bibles. They just know Peter had a sword.
Well, they've been misinterpreting whatever good was in that book for so long that it's really hard to untangle it now. But all these things play into it. I still stand by the analysis I've done shows that the underlying theme is still this condition we call psychopathy, which is a lack of conscience. And it comes out all over the place. And, you know, our legislators are definitely psychopathic when they keep paying the wealthy people more money by taking it away from the poor people. That's nuts in the vernacular.
Well, having read the book you kindly provided me, I've been asking a lot of questions with myself, Carol. And I think there's a difference between active psychopathy or active sociopathy and the sort of passive conscienclessness into which a lot of us fall, myself included. Okay? And what I mean by that is that, and I'm echoing somewhere, what I mean by that is that we are all co-opted into the capitalist system. It is not 100% inescapable for any of us. Most of us, by virtue of the fact that this program is on the internet and not on the terrestrial airwaves, have to listen to it via machines whose components are in large part produced under horrifying conditions that we would find unbearable were we the ones who were in them. And yet we are somehow able to numb ourselves, or through applied ignorance, able to ignore those conditions because we can't. Hey, Jeremy? Oh, okay. Because somehow or another we deem through some sort of probably subliminal cost-benefit analysis that we need those items. And you can run that across the board. Most of the people of conscience. Hey, Jeremy, you're making, thank you. Most people of conscience are horrified to know that any portion of the electricity that flows through their home is happening because people are being poisoned underneath mountaintop removal operations. People who turn on their heat, electric heat in the winter and have their homes warmed by virtue of gas-fired electric generation stations would probably be disturbed at the very least to know that their house is being heated because somebody has had their water made flammable. And if you start on this list, it could go for the rest of the evening. But everybody doing that isn't a psychopath.
No, that's what Potterization is. It's this brainwashing that happens emanating from psychopaths and slowly converting people to accepting psychopathic ideas as normal. It's like, you know, it removes the responsibility for your actions to a different level. You know, it allows some distance from what you're actually doing and the effects of it by, you know, listening to your leaders say, this is the way things are, this is the way they've always been, and this is a good thing. And that polarization, you know, is the whole country has been polarized. That's what happens in societies that are run by psychopaths.
That's how you can explain Nazi Germany, how millions of people just did nothing or said nothing and went along with the program, and, you know.
That's exactly why I started studying this stuff, because I've been trying to understand how the German people were co-opted so thoroughly. I've been trying to understand that since I was 12.
Well, but there were, at the risk of having to ring the bell and declare the time. It's a different situation in the Third Reich. If you raised your head, and more importantly, raised your voice, there was a mechanism there to actively make you go away, actively make you disappear. People who showed up in the dark and still of the night and said, come with us, and you were heard from no more. You know, all of our programs are archived at the White Rose Society, and the White Rose Society is named for the original White Rose Society that was founded by Sophie and Eric Scholl. Well, they were given a show trial, and they were taken out, and their heads were removed from their bodies. That explains some of the quietus of the German people, because that's a lot to ask of any given individual, especially one that is not operating as part of a group. That isn't happening here. It doesn't happen here. as many, and I want to be fair, but as many parallels as we can draw, that's one that we can't. There aren't death camps. People are not summarily executed in the dark and still of the night.
Well, Governor Abbott would beg to differ because they're preparing for a U.S. invasion of Texas, Bob.
Well, that's because he's... Now, see, and this is one of those places I'll draw a distinction. He's a paranoid idiot.
Right.
He doesn't have the brains to be a psychopath. Because generally, your psychopath and your sociopath have pretty high IQs. Greg Abbott is just a goddamn dummy.
Well, those are the governors Texas produces, isn't it? The last
actually,
three.
From the stuff that Robert Hare has written about, they don't have particularly high IQs. It looks that way because they are willing to take chances and do things nobody else will do because they don't fear the consequences. They don't think that far ahead. It's not really part of their makeup to have any long-term planning. So, no, I don't think that psychopaths, by definition, have a higher IQ. They're successful ones that are out in public and the unsuccessful ones that end up in jail.
But you do agree that nobody's being disappeared in the middle of the night, right?
I don't think it's gotten that extreme because there's way too much knowledge in the general populace now to get away with that. But if you look at the prison system, that is exactly what it is. I mean, instead of slavery overtly on a plantation, they move the plantation into a box somewhere and call it a jail. And then they move the prisoners in and out as though they were slaves. So, yeah, I think slavery is still going on, and we just don't recognize it because it's changed form a little bit. But the underlying motivation and the lack of conscience is the same. The ability to do these things without any sense of consequence. They don't lose sleep at night. It's like I felt so bad listening to these poor Christian people talking about the pain that they were suffering and trying to appeal to some inner sense of something in this guy who did these murders. And, you know, that's a hopeless task. There isn't anything in there to appeal to. There's no soul. There's no conscience. The things that motivate normal people are missing in these people. And there's no way you can get them to ever feel bad about what they did because they still think what they did was right.
They're almost not people in that sense, you know.
Bear in mind, as I have been thinking about the people as they sat there in the church, there are real world consequences to adopting nonviolence, and in point of fact. That is, insofar as it is the oldest AME church south of Baltimore, insofar as that church hosted Dr. King on, I read, a number of occasions, I can well imagine that the doctrine of nonviolence runs deep there. And if you study nonviolence, it is not pacifism, but it is also not the kind of thing where one responds to violence by engaging in violence of one's own.
Yeah, but running away wouldn't have been violence. It's just that you're so shocked when these kind of things happen, it takes you a minute to even realize what the hell's going on.
Carol, it doesn't take a minute to fire seven rounds out of a .45 caliber handgun.
But I'm saying while he was reloading, if people had tried to run, tried to flee the room, that it doesn't sound to me like that even happened. And I put that up to shock. And, you know, it just immobilizes you when you're shocked like that.
Well, absolutely.
Well, they probably couldn't believe it was happening. It's beyond belief. Here's this person who ingratiates himself into our prayer group, and before you know it, he pulls out, you know, this high-powered handgun and starts blasting away. I mean,
and that's one thing I don't understand. Had he been going there for a while?
I doubt if he'd ever been in the building before.
I think it was the first time. I'm not sure. That's the sense I get. I don't know for sure.
Well, and I only asked because in the audio that I played earlier, you know, they said, we welcomed you. and we were happy to have you. And I'm not clear. I don't know. And I didn't know if that applied, if that meant that just that one evening, or had he planned this far enough in advance that he had ingratiated himself to the congregation.
The sense that I got from hearing the initial reports from the people who had been in there is that they welcomed him that night that he showed up, and during the hour that he was in there, there might have been some interaction. I don't know, but I didn't get the feeling at all that there was any kind of long-term relationship going on. And, you know, it's like he planned this. He knew where they would be at a certain time, and they were a captive population because they're in a church. They're not going to be armed. They're not going to be threatening him. And he sat there long enough to get a feel for it and listen to them. And you know, who knows how their minds work? It's kind of dangerous to actually try to put yourself in their minds because they're so twisted. But I just got the feeling that he plotted it all out and then showed up that night and sat in with a prayer group meeting. I think it was an educational kind of thing. These people all seem to be mentors and teachers of the word. And then, you know, kind of stood up and said his piece and started doing what he thought, you know, he was supposed to do, which I can't put myself into that mindset. I've read about it so much, and it really creeps me out that there are beings like this. And you're right, Rick, there's something less than human about them, because the very thing that makes us human, our compassion and our ability to put ourselves in other people's shoes and to back off, those things they're just missing.
They're totally foreign to those sorts of people. They're just like, you know, I wouldn't call them a beast because I don't want to denigrate beasts, you know, but they're just,
they're empty.
They're totally empty.
Empty of emotions except for rage. Rage seems to be the thing that links them all together, this simmering rage.
Well, hatred. Hatred.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a shark doesn't hate. A lion doesn't hate. A tiger doesn't hate. A cobra doesn't hate. It acts out of its position in the natural world via instinct. As Twain pointed out, human beings are the only animals who hate. Let me keep the conversation flowing and run over and check in with Ron up in Canada. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Again, I think we can only apply to my old cracked magic eight ball that's always stuck on answer hazy. Ask again later.
Is Weller helping out?
The old feller is. I don't want to use the word panacea, but it is, there's the word, salubrious.
What a wonderful word.
I thought so.
If you can still say that word, you haven't had enough.
Well, that's true, too. Well, but you know, there's an oath involved with this program. I promised a long time ago that I would never do Limbaugh Radio.
Understood, and God bless you, son. God bless you.
Well, I would rather receive my while I appreciate yours, Ron. I would rather receive my blessings from Brother Weller and Reverend Craig, and yeah.
I would have hoped that you're receiving some blessing from Brother PayPal.
We got out of our hole this evening, and that was a huge bonus. Carol got it started, and Jack helped out, and Sylvia and Wesley, and then Harold just provided a world-beating whack. And so we're out of the deepest part of the hole we were in. It would be lovely if we could get out a little bit ahead, but that feels a little bit like asking too much. But if folks wanted to, just because we got out of the hole is not if folks want to help, by God, you know, living on the last, existing this network on the last frayed thread of a dry rotted tennis shoe string is a stressful way to go about it.
Hey, Bob, how about if I do this?
since you got my first challenge, Matt.
Yeah.
What if I kick in another $100 if somebody meets it over the weekend?
Okay, or between
will that bring
or between your
stress level down?
Well, let's push that. Let's not say over the weekend. Because let's say in the next hour.
Okay, whatever you want to do.
All right.
Will that help your stress level?
Yeah, it will.
And relax you for the weekend so you can not think about things.
I'm always going to think about things, but if I'm not, every minute that I'm not thinking about and sweating bills and whether or not we're going to have the phone for people to call in on, yeah, that's a bonus. So there it is.
Okay.
In the next hour and 2 minutes, there's a $100 matching offer from Sparky, but there's got to be $100 come in order for him to follow it up. So there we have it. If you want to do it by mail, shoot me an email telling me it's in the mail so I can tell Boss Man Wayne. Or if you want to do it via PayPal, well, the PayPal interface is right there. But, yeah, that does help. And if anybody wants to jump in and just match that and throw the challenge forward, that helps too.
That would be nice.
Bob, I'd throw in the comment that getting out of the hole is essentially like meeting the interest payment on your credit card bill.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because we're not really building up a principal.
No.
And, you know, next week, and I do, because of the way we operate here, I try to look at the bills and I say, okay, this much this week, this much this week, this much this week, and this much this week. So this was, there were two bills amounting $1,000 this week. Next week, there are three that will eat up the biggest part of whatever we raise next week. And it just goes on and on and on like that.
Well, what about all the rebates that you get back from the power company and the telephone company when your service is gone? Doesn't that help?
You'd be surprised how parsimonious they are about that.
Damn.
Yeah, sorry. You got a what?
I got a check in the mail today from the hospital. I had to go into their ultrasound, radiation, all the center at the hospital where they do all the tests and everything. Last October, I went in there for an ultrasound on my innards, and they figured they overcharged me or they got money, and then I got a $26 check in the mail today from them.
I'll be dipped. I mean, yeah, that's you reached into the community chest stack and pulled out bank error in your favor.
Yeah, 8 months after the test.
Right.
You should frame it, Sparky.
What?
You should frame that.
Hell no, he's
gonna
cash
it. Put it in the bank.
Do you get $50 for a bank error? Yeah, it's $50 for a bank error, I think, in the game, don't you?
No, I think it's 100, isn't it? Or is it 50?
Is it 100? Okay. Huh. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
As a good old hillbilly, despite where I live, this sounds like a good excuse for a story.
Do please.
I used to caddy at the Greenbrier, and occasionally I'd end up with a teaching round with Sam Sneed, who was the pro there at the time, and he would always bet. He would have bets going with the marks all the way around the nine holes for the teaching round. And occasionally he would lose. Not often, but occasionally. And he would always write a check. If he won, he insisted on being paid in cash. If he lost, he wrote a check. And somebody asked him about it once. He said, I can write a check to these people and they'll go home and they'll frame the damn thing because they won money from Sam Sneed. They'll never cash it. End of story.
Smart man.
That me, Jack.
Smart man that slammed Sammy.
kind of reminds me of Salvador Dali. He would pay for his bill by like doodling on the bill. you know, and he went to restaurants and so forth. So nobody would ever want to, you know, well, obviously that he sort of created his own money, so to speak, I guess, there, because it had value, just his writing. Same thing with Sam Snead, I guess.
Yep.
Was he a nice guy?
Most of the time, yeah. But he had a temper. He could light off occasionally. I think he would have made a good radio host, frankly.
He was known as Slamming Sammy, right?
Yep.
He was.
Was he a West Virginian?
Yep. Virginian, actually.
A Virginian, okay.
Yeah,
but he was one of those classic tales of the poor hillbilly kid who learns a rich man's game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was largely self-taught, wasn't he, Ron?
Yeah.
Wow.
And remarkably flexible. When he was 70 years old, he could still raise his foot high enough to touch the top of the doorframe.
Whoa. Jeez.
I couldn't do that when I was 18. And
well,
it looked like watching, you know, hot maple syrup. It was just so, his swing was just so freaking rhythmic and smooth. And
well, people say he had the best swing of any golfer ever, I think. I've heard many commentators say that, you know.
Well, it wasn't pretty like Bobby Jones and Payne Stewart's swing was pretty. But God Almighty, it was fluid, and it had power behind it that you just can't imagine.
And he used to play with the old persimmon woods.
Oh, yeah.
And persimmon has a different sound to it. And I still know a couple of people that use them simply because they like the sound.
Hmm.
And
you mean that?
Even as a persimmon, yeah, it sounded quite different than any other persimmon wood I heard hit at the time. It was just a power behind it. I mean, the ball was getting the hell out of Dodge. As far as the ball would travel with those old clubs at that time.
Is that a hardwood persimmon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really rather difficult to work with, I understand.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, thanks.
We're 9 different directions.
Well, thanks for the golf porn. It gets our mind off of the, you know, sad topics of the day here, you know, Ron?
Well, I'm willing to impart additional news from Canada. Not news, it's my own damned opinion, but there's a lot of other people on here tonight that sound on, obviously want to talk, so I'll bail for the time being.
Well, that being the case, and thank you, Ron, let's run over to the stress line. I think we've got Kevin, right?
Yep, sure do. Here in El Hot, Colorado, got up to about 90 today, but it didn't rain. That's a positive. So, you know, that global warming thing.
Well, wait, is it raining out in the dry rain shadow part of Colorado too?
Yeah, it's been raining all over the state. We had flood warnings most of the week. Probably even have them today. Even if it didn't rain because of all the, you know, snow melting in the mountains, plus the runoff from the rain we got all this week. It's just been a very unusual, if you could call it spring, because about 3 days ago the high was like 65. Now it's 90. You know, he goes from one extreme to another very quickly. And I've been here 20 years now, and I have never seen it rain like this. Just almost every day, hard ride. Today's Friday, Wednesday. We got a rain just west of the springs. They got 3 inches of rain. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot to people in, say, Florida, where they get rain all the time like that. But here, 3 inches of rain is quite a bit, especially when it comes down in about 2 hours of time. And, you know, we're having one place here in Colorado Springs, they're having to use sump pumps to pump the water out of their basement. It's been raining that bad. So, you know, but of course, the GOP doesn't believe in global warming, and our governor corporate Democrat that he is. He may believe in may not believe in global warming, but he sure doesn't mind approving fracking and things like that. So I don't know.
He sounds like Governor Brown out here in California, Kevin.
Yep. That's the category I'd put him in. He's not completely useless. There have been some things I've applauded him doing, but there have been things that he has done that I say, really? You call yourself a Democrat? You know, and so, but on the matter, on the topic of shootings, Bob, you know, I was thinking last night, just down the road from me, about 4 or 5 blocks, you remember the story from a couple years ago, the guy shot his daughter sneaking in at late at night. She was coming in a window because she was past her curfew and was trying to sneak back in. And he thought it was a burglar, and instead of making sure, he just shot when he saw her coming through the window.
Yeah.
Can't call that an accident. I wouldn't call it an accident. And, you know, I got it on Twitter yesterday when I was posting about how senseless this shooting in South Carolina was. Well, if there had only been someone there with a gun, and it's like they live in such a fairy tale world that someone like this kid shooting like he did, there could have been 10 people there with a gun and it wouldn't have mattered. You know, and it just amazes me.
Right, because chaos. Because,
yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you got to live in a fairy tale world to think that a gun is going to solve your problems. I'm not against carrying a gun. You talked about the time you had to carry one. But there is such a thing as gun sense. And the father that gave this kid the gun for his birthday, in my opinion, ought to be facing charges too. Because he knew that kid's history. He knew that kid had no business with a gun to begin with. And yet, he chose to give that child, and he's not a child, but he chose to give his child a gun for his birthday. And that's, you know.
And yet, in a place like South Carolina, that's the last thing being criticized, Kevin.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, going back, I had a note from Jim a few minutes ago. Going back to the question of how certain things happened in the 1930s in Europe, under the subject line Nazi access to power, Jim says simply, the Depression. Wall Street sneezed, Great Britain caught a cold, and Weimar Germany died of pneumonia.
Yep.
And in a way, it not to the same extent, but in a way, we saw something similar transpire. You know, the whole Arab Spring arose out of the ability of countries to no longer be able to feed bread, you know, the staff of life, to their most fragile citizenry. And that drove people to a state of political agitation that resulted in revolution. And that was because the titans of the speculation industry had been allowed to begin speculating in the most elemental commodities, which at one time they were prevented from. And I only mention that because in the midst of the horror that was Charleston and remains Charleston, we have another story that's going to largely be blown past, sort of the way that we've blown past the single most important statement of faith to come out of the Roman Catholic Church in two generations. And naturally, the story comes out of Texas. And it's a horror. It's the story of a woman who has been trying since November to get food stamps for her children and herself. She and her children, Rachelle Grimmer, age 38, moved her children, Ramey and Timothy, daughter and a son, from near Columbus, Ohio, to San Antonio, Texas. God knows why. She applied for food stamps. The Texas state apparatus said, you have not given us enough information that you need to eat food. And so, oh, God, Tuesday, Rachelle Grimmer and her two children walked into the DHHR office, asked to speak to a caseworker. They still had not received food stamps, or EBT. Once they got into the room with the caseworker, she pulled a gun, and a hostage standoff began. Eventually, she let the caseworker go, but she kept hanging up on the hostage negotiator, who was desperately trying to get in there so that she could be arrested. Well, eventually, she shot both of her children and then killed herself. Her 10-year-old and her 12-year-old, and then killed herself. Even in the wake of the horror, a caseworker there at the Texas Department of Health and Human Services building in Laredo, spokesperson Stephanie Goodman said, well, we don't know what it was that she didn't provide, but along the way, it has been learned that in order to qualify to receive an allocation whereby one may feed one's hungry children, one has to fill out in the state of Texas an 18-page application. Man, can you, and of course, let's remember, Texas is a very Christian place. Can you imagine what it would have been like when Jesus was feeding the multitudes if he'd made the 5,000 fill out an 18-page application before he performed a miracle and gave them loaves and fishes? I'm not offering up any kind of a justification. There is never a justification for handgun violence or gun violence generally. But if there should be some means by which, with less than 18 pages of inquisition, one can determine whether or not children should be able to eat food in Texas or any other state in this union. The children aren't dead. When they were rescued, they were said to be in grave condition, critical condition. They are now orphans. And we are, of course, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Amen.
You know, I was thinking this yesterday, too. I am ashamed to be a member of the human race at this point. As you were reading that story, I was thinking, where are the Christians? The Christians that say they believe in the words of Jesus, because what did Jesus say? Feed the poor.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, Kevin, if he is apprised of this story, I wonder if Jimmy Dick Perry will declare this an accident as well.
Yep.
And if it's an accident, on whose part will the accident be, Kevin? Will it be an accident that the woman shot herself and her children out of a sense of desperation and fear or anger or whatever? Or will it just
I
be
think a, you blame it on
or will it be an accident that there's an 18-page application in order to be able to eat food?
I think it's the damn bureaucrats' fault, Bob, creating an 18-page application. I mean, come on. You know, it's the bureaucrats.
Yeah, we should probably just roll Greg Abbott up onto a dais and let him sit there and let people come one by one and present their pleas to him as they did unto Solomon of old. That's the way it ought to work, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's democracy, right?
God almighty.
Shouldn't have moved to Texas.
Well, there's that. But then again, she left Zanesville, Ohio. You know, and who knows what she was leaving, or why she felt she had to leave. On her Facebook page, where it says hometown, she had written nowhere. And of course, as Ron points out, they may be orphans, but if the children survive, they'll be wards of the state, and presumably then they'll finally be fed and housed and maybe educated. Or, like other foster children have been in Texas, maybe they'll be dragged behind a truck. Because I remember when one Christian foster care outfit was doing that in Texas.
Were they people of color?
Offhand, I don't think so.
Well, because that's the only reason I know people down in Texas drag people behind trucks.
No, they were being run for exercise. But if you can't run no more, you wind up getting dragged.
Oh.
Okay. Well, this coming in from Jug of Punch in the chat room, Zanesville is poverty on steroids.
She just needed to pick herself up by her bootstraps. That's their right-wing justification for that 18-page thing.
Yeah, because we want to make sure there ain't nobody eating food out there who ought not be eating food.
Yep.
Because, of course, in brutal places like Texas, the presumption is that everybody can afford to eat. And by God, it is a burden of proof on you if you can't, and shame on you for not being able to afford food. I mean, that's why they did what they did up in Kansas, right? Make sure that Mama Rochelle wasn't out there going to the ATM machine so she could go and gamble to the dog track or the stripper club.
I mean, I can't understand why folks need to eat, Bob. I mean, what's the big deal? You know, just suck it up and, you know, go hungry a little bit. You know, what's wrong with these people applying for food aid?
I mean, it builds character, hunger does. Haven't we been told that? I mean, remember a couple of years ago when the oxymoron Flush Flimball said, haven't they ever heard of dumpster diving?
Oh, man, what passes for brains on that side of the aisle, man? I do not understand it, you know?
Well, it's just straight-up evil. Oh, and by the way, thanks need to go out. Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Kate, and thank you, Asa. We have met and exceeded Sparky's second challenge, which is wonderful.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you, Sparky.
Hey, I'm a giver.
Well,
I get
you've learned at the you've learned at the foot of the master. Absolutely.
I always willing to help out, Bob.
Well, it means a great deal because it means this keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wish I was independently wealthy. And, you know, maybe someday, who knows? But until then.
Well, I just got a good pension from being a union member.
And and Kate offered up a note. She said, this is to offer another spark to the pot. And thanks to all who helped with the hole this week. And Ron's constitutes a further $50 challenge. He put that out there, and it did get met. A further $50 challenge, but only if, Sparky, your challenge was met first.
Well, that's good. See, that pull-the-pin shit works.
Yeah, it really does. Now that we've made sure that everybody understands we're talking about fire extinguishers and not grenades.
Well, it's a pull pin on the whole extinguisher. So, thanks to everybody.
Oh, damn. I just made a huge mistake. I don't know how it... I'm usually... One of these slips past me. That Texas story is 4 years old. So, thank you to Asa for catching that one.
Oh, geez.
But,
well, either way, it's still valid.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it doesn't change the horror.
Hey, Roger and Humboldt's here, Bob.
Hey, Roger, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing just fine. I thought I'd kind of change the depressive nature of the week and tell you that all four squash plants are still growing. And you got me?
I do.
Okay. All four plants are still growing, and a couple of them are starting to send out a runner. They're only about a foot and a half long now. And I thought about taking some pictures earlier and posting them so we could talk about it, but stuff happens, and I didn't get it done. I was planting more cabbage and cauliflower and broccoli and that kind of stuff. But everything's still growing. But to get back on the food side, it's been estimated that approximately 40% of the food grown and distributed in the United States is thrown away. And that has to do with supermarkets throwing away apples with a blemish, or restaurants serving too big a portions, or spoilage in transit, or. And that, to me, is really depressing.
Well, to me, it's obscene. Now, I have heard in the past, Roger, that some of those throwaways are Department of Health and Sanitation rules, and I can see where that might be the case. But good God, take it and give it to the food bank, because they need food every day. You know,
whatever. When I've been selling at farmers markets on the Thursday farmers market, at the end of that Thursday farmers market, I pack everything up, put it on my trailer, bring it home, and that's a Thursday that closes at 6:30, and at 9 o'clock on Friday morning, I'm down at the food bank. And last year, I donated 1,100 pounds of produce to the local food bank. Because all I'd do is put it on a compost pile. Well, I'd rather take it to the food bank and let somebody eat it than make compost out of it.
Well, sure. And do they do you ever get any pushback? Well, we're sorry. I mean, you know, we don't need your produce this week.
Quite the contrary. It's I get a phone call. When are you going to start selling at farmers market? Because we need some lettuce, beets, beans, broccoli, cabbage, kohlrabi, whatever. We need fresh produce, and well, I don't have it yet. You know, I'm not selling yet, and I'm backing off because, well, I'm 70 years old, and this was supposed to be fun, and I'm supposed to be retired, and it became more of a job than I wanted. But I'm still doing a little bit, but not like I used to.
Well, you know, you've certainly beaten the odds on the four seeds, Roger. Only one or two of those were supposed to even germinate.
Well, no, that was the original six seeds from the pod. These modern seeds, i.e., should have a much better germination rate. But when they do come on and I take the squash down to sell at the farmer's market, I'm going to sell them as chunks of squash where I harvest the seed, so I've got more seeds to have more than four plants next year.
Right. Well,
I don't know. I'll have seeds to send back to you, and you can pass them on to other people.
That'll be a beautiful thing, because I'll turn them back around to the folks who were kind enough to send them to me, and then I'll try a few myself and maybe share a few around the neighborhood here.
Well, I depending on what the squash ends up looking like, there's a couple of hundred seeds in every squash that comes out, and every squash plant should put out 8 or 10 fully mature big squashes, so that's 800 to 1,000 seeds that I'll have. And it's just a matter of harvesting them and washing them and drying them and storing them and, you know, all the rest of that stuff, and send you back at least tenfold, if not a hundredfold.
That'll be amazing, because it'll, I don't know, we may get something started here. There's no reason they shouldn't grow great guns here as well.
Well, this season's been a little weird here it's been cool and things have been real slow to get started and all the rest of it, but we're heading into summer, you know, maybe the temperature will get over 65 one of these days and things will grow.
Temperature get over 65. Sparky's liable to reach right through the line and smack you.
Yeah, well, he lives over there in that hot valley. I don't, but I got water.
Yeah, I got tomatoes.
Yeah, well, I don't even try to grow them anymore.
I've got one tomato off one of my early girl plants, and I've got one off of my celebrity plants, and they were both yummy.
Well, I'm about ready to harvest my first beets.
Roger, you said you're not hurting for water. I mean, are you getting plenty of rainfall?
No, I don't have rainfall. I got two wells on the property and a creek running through. And the creek's got plenty of water in it. We're a unique area here in California. When they did this 25% cutback and all the rest of it, we finally convinced them that since we have 4 years' supply behind a dam, even if we don't get any more rain, we only have to cut back 4% up here. But I don't use city water to irrigate the garden at all. I use a solar panels, batteries, a solar-powered pump, and pump it up into a tank, and then it distributes out to the drip irrigation, and everything stays green. Now, not the grass. I'm not watering the grass or anything like that. But as far as the garden goes,
well, you better be careful. Limited. You better be careful. Those miserable bastards, those privileged little punks from Rancho Santa Fe, will come up and start hauling away in buckets.
Awful big buckets, because we're so low in elevation, there's no way to get it anywhere out of the basin.
What are you above mean sea level?
Me? I'm about 150, 200 feet.
Wow.
I mean, the reservoir is up at about maybe 2,000, and it lets water out into the river, and then they got pumps in the river, you know, drilled down under the river, and pumping it out. And when they first built the system, they had permits for 60 million gallons a day because we had two pulp mills, and we're only using about 20 million gallons of water a day, and we got no problem, none. But we're about the only place in California that doesn't have a water problem.
I can give a report on the Sacramento River.
Absolutely.
It was about a week or so, the Bureau of Water Resources cut off the farmers that had pumps on the Sacramento River. They can no longer operate those pumps. They have to go to groundwater, I guess, which is really bad because NASA released that study about the aquifer in California is supposedly going dry. I don't know what I'll do if it goes dry.
Groundwater comes from rivers, comes from stream creeks and rivers.
Well,
percolates down into the aquifer.
Well, that's why I'm not really worried, because the Sacramento River is still flowing pretty good. I mean, we had a sad story the other day. 17-year-old teenager. You know where Woodson Bridge is, Roger?
No, I don't. But
well, it's near Corning.
Okay.
North of Chico. There's a cutoff. You can go, if you come up 99, you can cut across to go over towards Corning. You go over Woodson Bridge. Well, this 17-year-old teenager thought he could swim the Sacramento River. And the water in the Sacramento River is ice cold. I mean, really, it's cold. You can't, on a hot day, you can't, all you can do is jump in it and get right back out, or you're going to get hypothermia or whatever. But he thought he could swim the river, and he drowned. They're still searching for the body.
Well, the middle of May, I used the GPS to run from Williams over to Biggs,
mm-hmm.
which is north of Yuba City, Marysville, and crossed the Sacramento. It was full. All the rice paddies were getting flooded. People were pumping and irrigating, and, I mean, it was just like there was no problem at all. I didn't see a fallow field the whole drive over.
Well, that may be from the Tama-Calusa Canal.
I don't know where the water was coming from, but instead of just taking Highway 20, which I would have done if I'd only had a map, I depended on the GPS, and it said turn left, turn right, turn left, turn right. And I was out driving these little roads and getting stuck behind farming equipment, which was fine with me. I wasn't in any hurry. And the biplanes flying over the rice paddies and spraying, and
mm-hmm.
they're all getting flooded, and they're all planted, and all the rows are up, and they weren't even doing the drip. They were still doing the siphon tubes out of the ditch next to the field, and watering down between the rows on gravity feed, and it didn't look to me like there was a drought. And yet you get down on I-5 around Fresno, and the almond orchards are going dry, and pistachio orchards are going dry. But when I ran up from Fresno up toward Kings Canyon National Park, all those orange groves in there were looking fantastic. You know, it's real spotty on who's getting screwed and who's not.
They came out with a list of the 10 cities that are going to run out of water shortly here in California.
Well, there's one about 30 miles south of us called Rio Dell. It's running out of water.
Well, most of them are down in the San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah, well, this one's on the Eel River. And the Eel River's not getting a whole lot of water because, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago they put in a dam and built a pipeline, and they're dumping half the Eel River water down into the Russian River to feed the vineyards. And so the people on the Eel River are getting screwed, and they don't have any water.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But that's in the great state of California. All kinds of shit makes sense to somebody, including Jerry Brown with his fracking crap.
We've been having water wars for years.
Oh, yeah. It goes back to the 40s and 50s.
Well,
but even before that.
Just remember that goober from Harvard says they're getting better at not ruining water and fracking. Oh, by the way, Sparky, you had a note from Kate. She said, thanks, buddy, for your generosity and your service to the effort. Stay cool, please.
I'm trying. It's only 96 today.
You're not in the 96, though, are you? I mean, it's only...
No.
Yeah, it's only,
no,
it's
no. I have my air conditioner working just fine. It's like 76 in the house.
It's only 82 here in the studio right now. By the way, you'll get a kick out of this, Sparky. The folks who run the antiquated coal-fired power grid at Appalachian Power have put out an offer out there. They'll give you an $8 a month credit if you'll let them put a box on your air conditioner that lets them turn it off whenever they want to. $8 a month. But that's only July, August, and September.
Yeah, well, that box that was on, that's still on mine, I've come to find out that my parents got a $50 credit. It was a one-time credit years ago for putting that box on. And you remember, I got smart metered, or they turned it off at least once every summer for the last few years. My dad was lying in his deathbed last year, and they turned it off.
Bastards.
So now that box is rotting on the side of that air conditioner. It's totally disconnected.
Good.
I was going to say, Sparky, you got enough knowledge to circumvent that.
Well, when you open it, when you open up the thing, there was a tag on there from PG&E. It said, do not remove.
This tag. Yeah, there's one of those on the mattress, too.
Well, when I talked to the technician, he goes, well, that's on your side of the, that's in your side of the air conditioner. It's not in the box. Do not go into the box. You can cut those wire. I said, I can. I said, I won't get in trouble. And he goes, no. And I said, well, I'm going out right now, and I'm hacking them off, and I'm slicing it in, and I'm making the thing run. And that box can rot on the side of that compressor. And he says, well, we'll make an effort to come out and remove it. And I just says, I just laughed. I said, they won't ever come out and remove it. It'll just sit there.
Well, see, I don't even own an air conditioner.
Well, you got to have an air conditioner if you live in the valley.
Well, I understand that. That's why I don't live over there in that armpit of the state.
Oh, now we're getting into fighting words.
Yeah, but well, what I call it an armpit, that's at least kept keeping it above the waist. There's other names I could call it.
Yeah, but wait a minute. He's not criticizing. He's not going after Dungan. He's going after the. He's just saying he can't live in that place, that part of the state.
Oh, Larry, you don't understand geographic attachments.
Now, anything from Redding all the way to the Mexican border, I couldn't live in. I mean, I've been in Palm Springs and 29 Palms and Anza Borrego and, oh, hell, what's the name of the little town on the Arizona-California border down there by the Colorado River?
Not Mexico.
Anyhow, I've been all through that when I was driving a moving van in the summer in a tractor trailer with no air conditioning, all the rest of it. And, you know, it may be beautiful. You have beautiful golf courses and all the rest of that stuff. But you go from your air-conditioned house to your air-conditioned car to the air-conditioned supermarket to the air-conditioned house to the air-conditioned restaurant to the air-conditioned bowling alley. You know, and I'd much rather be able to walk around in shirt sleeves and enjoy myself. I mean, tomorrow I'm going to an oyster festival. It's going to be a beautiful sunny day, and the temperature is going to be 68, maybe 70.
Oh, great. Now we're in the food porn. Oyster festival, quit it.
Yeah. It's an oyster festival. Last year, they estimated there were 14,000 people that came in and wandered around at the plaza. Is a one square block in the middle of town, the statue of McKinley. It's got some palm trees and that kind of stuff. And they all get set up, and all these different restaurants and people come out, and they barbecue up oysters and put their different sauces on and all the rest of that. And you wander around and get, you know, well, a lot of them are like three oysters for $5, which, you know, that ain't cheap for buying oysters. But Humboldt Bay is one of the major oyster-growing bays on the West Coast. And Arcata Bay is where they do it. And so it's the 25th year of this Oyster Festival. And it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, goes till 5:30, and they have oyster calling contests, oyster shucking contests.
Wait, time out. Oyster calling contest? This I got to hear about.
I've never been around for it, but, you know, it's like a hog calling contest, except with a hog calling contest, you can actually get hogs to come to you.
Well, David, yeah.
Oyster calling contest is just something they dreamed up to have something on the stage between the musical sets. And
so people really do stand up there behind a microphone and honk, yeah, oyster, like that, you know, whistles and the...
Yeah. Yeah. And then my local watering hole down there, they usually set up a barbecue back on their smoking porch, and they do like 6 oysters for $5, so you don't have to stand in such long lines out on the plaza to get the fancy ones. And everybody just goes down, you get your wristband, and you buy your beer, and you walk around, drink beer, and eat oysters, and listen to music, and waste the afternoon on a nice summer Sunday, or Saturday, actually.
It's Humboldt County, Bob. Enough said.
Oh, yeah, kind of forgot. Probably a little of that Humboldt happiness involved somewhere along the way, too.
Well, I'm sure that half a block off, you probably could get a contact high if you hung around
for
a
while.
Well,
I was going to say, it brings a whole new meaning to the idea of smoked oysters now, doesn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, as I say, the town's only got like 7,000 people in it, and they end up with 14,000 people coming to the party.
For a minute there, when you said oyster calling, and I thought you meant calling, and apparently you did mean calling. Tim from L.A. thought you meant culling, like being able to sort oysters by grade or quality.
No. This is calling. Here, oyster. As I say, I've never hung around to listen to it.
Well, I got to think that has a little bit to do with that Humboldt happiness now, don't you?
Could very well be, but there's a...
Dude, let's call some oysters.
Down at Tomales Bay, they've gotten kind of... The National Park Service has kind of thrown them out and all that. But anyhow, the one of the outfits from down there has moved up here. And they're planning on coming in, and they're bringing 10,000 oysters to do barbecue at the one stand. And it's been impossible to buy a fresh oyster here in town for at least a week because they're just all storing them up and keeping them on ice to provide the oysters for this party tomorrow.
Well, I had my first and only Pacific oysters just a few years ago in that one lone trip to the Bay Area, and I remembered my dad talking about how he didn't like Pacific oysters, that they were different, and I agree with him. They are different, but I don't dislike them. Oh no.
Well, I much prefer them barbecued than raw.
Well,
I don't like raw oysters.
I had several different varieties there at Swan's Oyster Depot in San Francisco, and holy mackerel, oh, they were delicious. Then again, so too was the sea urchin, but that's another story.
Well, the next time you get out here to the West Coast, you got to get a little further north than Muir Woods.
Well, I wish that had been within my control back then, because God knows. I mean, you're making me just curious as hell to see Humboldt. I mean, it sounds like my kind of place. You know, 70 degrees is a blistering hot day. I'm right there with you.
Well, my scarlet runner beans are up over 10 feet already.
Gee whiz!
And I haven't harvested a bean yet. They're just in flower. I haven't even seen a little bean yet.
And they have lovely little blossoms.
Oh yeah. And yet the ones I grow have always had red blossoms. And I was out doing some work in them the other day, and I got 2 plants that now have a pale pink blossom. And beans don't cross-pollinate, so this is simply a self-mutating kind of number.
You've been visited by nature.
Yeah.
Evolutionary biology.
And I've been growing off this same stock for over 30 years and never had an off flower. And now I got an off flower. So I've marked that vine as, you know, these are kind of special. And so now I'm saving my seed for the off-color flower, the super height,
and pods that have seven beans in them instead of the usual five. Somebody's got a bird.
I think it might be Tim from L.A., but I just heard some of his neighbors.
Well, I'm not sitting at the computer, so I can't see who's lighting up.
Well, Gregor Mendel would be proud of you. With your.
We haven't heard from Tim if he wants to speak.
Yeah, Tim, jump right in.
Hello, just listening today. Busy week.
When are you going to Portland?
I'm taking off this Sunday morning. Can't wait. And I heard that down here it's going to be hot and humid. So Portland's probably going to be a lot more better than L.A., thank goodness. Also, I'm monitoring the fire, you know, the lake fire. That's happening in San Bernardino near Big Bear. And the fire is not too far from the campground our church attends. It's called Camp Divinaville. And I think the fire started last night. It was 1,200 acres, and this morning it jumped to 10,000 acres burned. And everyone's kind of worried. And luckily, the fire's heading east. But I'm checking with CAL FIRES and to see what the weather's going to be like. Because if we get a Santa Ana, you know, the high pressure over us, the wind will go west. And the campground would be in the line of fire. So I'm monitoring it right now. And people say, oh, there's no such thing as global warming. Yeah, right.
Oh, it's going to be a bad year up and down the state.
Almost definitely. It's going to be horrendous. I'm sorry.
Every year, the fire season seems to get worse because of the beetles and everything.
Yep.
They're eating the trees and...
And hopefully, I'm also monitoring NOAA, the news. They said that come this fall, winter, El Nino may finally arrive.
One can only hope.
Sounds like somebody's having fun in the background.
I think that's Tim's neighbors.
Do they have the bird too, Tim?
Anyway.
Oh, by the way, just
Larry's here too.
Yeah.
How is everyone?
Pretty good, Larry. Pretty good. How about you?
I'm okay. By the way, the budget was passed, and Mercedes is going to get a 7% increase in her IHSS check, which is nice. But there was an attempt by my assembly member to raise the state supplemental portion of the SSI, raise the, we get right now $889 a month, which is 90% of poverty level, and he offered a piece of legislation in February to raise the, raise us to 112% of poverty level, and the governor won't sign it. So we're not going to get an increase from 90% of poverty level up to 112% of poverty level. And that's what Brown do. So Brown's not only doing the fracking number, but he's also won't increase the state supplemental portion of the SSI. But Mercedes is going to get a 7% increase. So I guess people are telling me I ought to be grateful for the positive things and not worry so much about the negative things right now. And I'm with Roger about the fracking. You know, I just think that, the governor, people are supporting the governor, but he wants the high-speed rail more than he wants to do social services. It's like pulling teeth with him right now. I don't know, Roger, you feel the same way, but that's what I feel.
He's become an irascible old man.
Yeah. What do you think, Bob? What do you think, Dunk? I mean, what do other people think? I mean, I have a
hard time. I'm echoing.
Sorry, Bob.
I have a hard time. Castigating the high speed rail. It really is the future. But by the same token, you know, you hope we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And the problems run, you know, it smells like robbing Peter to pay Paul, but the bottom line is that it ain't Peter and it ain't Paul, it's Pilot. And Pilot's got all the money. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah, there's. Maybe I'm just making an idiot of myself, but.
Oh, Bob, I was muted, so you didn't get my answer. I see what you're saying. I mean, he really wants the high speed rail, and I can understand the state needs it. You know, I want to be able to get from. You go up to visit Sparky if I want to, or go up and visit Roger, or be able to go around and stuff like that. I mean, I really want that ability, but I think that there are ways that he could do it without having to cut social services, and he doesn't want to raise taxes on the oil companies or on the, you know, I mean, the Democrats have been raising that issue over and over again for years, and nobody wants to touch it.
We already got the pollution tax.
Yeah. So, you know,
we're the only state in the union that's got a cap and trade kind of tax. It taxes polluters.
Okay.
And they're using that money on solar and high speed rail, anything is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to waste, but I mean, it's to advance the future, combat. I just want to see the high-speed rail get built, the first section of it get built. I just want to see it run.
Yeah, you know, perhaps I have a misunderstanding. I don't know. You know, perhaps I'm misunderstanding or I'm not seeing the whole picture, but.
Well, is there an 18-page application in order to qualify for food stamps out there?
I don't think so.
No, I think the max is like 6 pages.
So my question, and I asked Rick this last night, when they say something is 90% of poverty level, or 112% of poverty level, or whatever that means, or 200% of poverty level, what does that mean?
That means that there is a federally established poverty level there, and it is usually way too low to begin with. So if something is 137% of the poverty level, you take the poverty level and you multiply it by 137%, and that number is the cutoff number, for instance, like with the Medicaid expansion.
Okay. All right, so it's a federally established level. Just arbitrary.
It's not arbitrary. I mean, it's got, you know, color 8x10 glossy photographs of circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. Although it could just as well be done with a Ouija board. It's a federally established income level.
Some bureaucrat sitting behind a desk that's making about $3,000 a month have sat down and figured out what the minimum rent is for an area, the minimum amount of food you need, and all the rest of it, and comes up and decides you need $1,000 a month to not be living in poverty, whatever poverty means. And that's the defined poverty level. And if you make below $1,000 a month, you're in poverty. If you make over $1,000 a month, you're not in poverty. So somebody making $999 a month is in poverty, and somebody making $1,001 a month isn't in poverty.
Okay, so the last question I have to ask before we have to close out for this evening show is, now that I just said that, now I can't think about what, now I can't,
Oh, well, no offense, Larry, but that's probably just as well because we got less.
Okay.
Save it for after hours.
All right, thank you.
We've got less than 2 minutes, and I want to make sure we get all of the thank yous in. I want to thank everybody who dug us out of the hole this evening. Thank you very, very kindly to Harold. Thank you so very much. And thank you as well to Carol and to Ron and to Asa. And thank you very kindly to Kate. And Duncan, thank you for not just one challenge, but two challenges. It's hard to appropriately express it, but when we don't, you know, when we're facing closing the week in a $650 hole, everybody stepping up like that makes a very, very, very big impact. So thank you, one and all. Thanks to everybody who participated this evening, both Kevin on the stress line, and thanks to Rick and Carol and Tim and Roger in Humboldt and Larry, and I'm sorry we didn't hear from Roger in Minnesota. And thanks to you at home who email or tweet or Facebook or sometimes don't even do any of those things, but every now and then just sort of pop up out of the blue and go, hey, Bob, we're listening. That's awfully nice to know because this is a real community and you all mean a very great deal to me. That's maybe why we're not such a commercial success, because it doesn't feel commercial. Reminder that the Horn Molloy Skype chat group will continue after this program and probably during Mike's program from 9 to midnight. And after midnight, the real fun's going to get started when the group fires up again in conversation after Molloy closes his program. If you've never participated, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and you will be into one of the most rollicking conversations around. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT.org, and always, 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 yes, Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.